The old paradigm of blind engagement with China simply won't get it done. We must not continue it, and we must not return to it.
Tensions escalate between the United States and China. It's Monday, July 27th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, China's growing effect on the upcoming U.S. presidential election. Indian migrants make a new life. Equal opportunity for those with disabilities. A race to Mars. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Amid rising diplomatic tensions, China has ordered the United States to close its consulate in Chengdu. Experts see the move as retaliation for the U.S. closing China's consulate in Houston and says it reflects a new level of hostility between the two countries ahead of U.S. presidential elections in November. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain joins us to tell us more.
China swiftly retaliated against the U.S., closing the American consulate in the city of Chengdu, which covers the autonomous region of Tibet. The move came after the U.S. demanded China close its consulate in Houston. In a speech Thursday, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the Houston consulate was a hub of spying and intellectual property theft, and said 40 years of blind engagement with China had failed.
The old paradigm of blind engagement with China simply won't get it done. We must not continue it, and we must not return to it.
A State Department official says China has made it clear it wants to be the first to develop a coronavirus vaccine, and that the decision to close Beijing's Houston consulate included a medical espionage component. After a number of friendly meetings between U.S. President Donald Trump and China's President Xi Jinping, experts say the consulate closures and Pompeo's speech signal a shift from civil engagement toward open hostility.
U.S. policy is response to really what China has been doing, which is an increasingly bullying, belligerent, and hostile posture toward its neighbors in the region and toward democratic values and interests in the world.
Other experts note the tougher tone towards China coincides with Trump's re-election campaign.
I think that the speech was intended to provoke a response from China in order to intensify political feeling in the U.S. of hostility toward China and to help rescue President Trump's election campaign before November.
With tensions over China's security crackdown on Hong Kong and its early handling of the coronavirus outbreak in Wuhan, some experts say the U.S. pushback happening now was inevitable.
I think the friction was inevitable because if we were going to shift our thinking and policy about China, then clearly some of the nice, chummy old things will have to be changed.
A Chinese foreign ministry spokesman announced the Chengdu closure and blamed the U.S. for the current state of U.S.-China relations. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you make a visit to voanews.com. 24 Rohingya migrants feared drowned off Malaysian resort. China, Pakistan reject biowarfare development collusion. Vietnamese city reimposes distancing after first local infections in months. United Nations says thousands of anti-Pakistan militants are in Afghanistan. No beer or chicken, but South Korean fans are back at the ball game. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as our voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo laid out the current U.S. policy on China at the Nixon Library in Southern California, calling it a choice between freedom and tyranny 48 years after President Richard Nixon reopened relations with China. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has details from Los Angeles.
At the Nixon Library in Southern California, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo presents the Trump administration's hardline stance on China.
The old paradigm of blind engagement with China simply won't get it done. We must not continue it, and we must not return to it. As President Trump has made very clear, we need a strategy that protects the American economy and indeed our way of life. The free world must triumph over this new tyranny.
Pompeo says the old way of engaging with China resulted in self-censorship among U.S. businesses and in Hollywood, while China continues with repression on the Chinese mainland and Hong Kong. He says China is seeking global dominance and has become increasingly authoritarian at home and hostile to freedom abroad. Pompeo's speech comes the same week the U.S. ordered the Chinese consulate in Houston to close within 72 hours, calling it a hub of spying and intellectual property theft.
This is entirely malicious slander. This demolishes the bridge of friendship between Chinese and America.
The only way to truly change communist China is to act not on the basis of what Chinese leaders say, but how they behave. And you can see American policy responding to this conclusion. President Reagan said that he dealt with the Soviet Union on the basis of trust but verify. When it comes to the CCP, I say we must distrust and verify.
It is not surprising that the U.S. is taking a tougher approach on China, says the RAND Corporation's China expert, Timothy Heath.
That there is a long-term trend that's been going on since President Bush, George Bush Jr., of a gradual hardening of America's position regarding China. And I think ultimately that derives from the reality that the gap in national power is narrowing, that there is a real competition going on.
I call on
Pompeo is asking other nations to also hold China accountable, but it may not be that simple.
A lot of countries are dependent or at least rely a lot on trade with China. And so it's not going to be easy for many countries in the world to, so-called pick a side and join the U.S. in some of its harder line policies.
Heath says there is bipartisan support for a harder line on China, especially on specific issues such as intellectual property theft and China's approach to Hong Kong, which may be an indicator as to what will happen after the November presidential elections.
President candidate Joe Biden has voiced a very tough line on China, echoing, again, quite a bit of bipartisan concern about China. So I anticipate, regardless of who wins the election, there will be a lot of what you see from the Trump administration will continue.
The question remains to be seen whether this approach will be more successful than what was tried with other administrations. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Happening now in Asia, there was tight security presence outside the U.S. consulate in the city of Chengdu, China, Sunday, as the American staff prepared to leave the premises. China charged that some personnel at the Chengdu consulate were conducting activities not in line with their identities. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us today on VOA Asia. In the wake of the coronavirus pandemic, President Donald Trump has adopted an increasingly hardline policy against Beijing, elevating U.S.-China policy as a major issue in the presidential election campaign. Trump, who last week ordered Beijing to close its consulate in Houston, Texas, has criticized his Democratic Party rival, former Vice President Joe Biden, as being soft on China. But, as VOA's Brian Padden reports, Biden also portrays himself as tough on China and has criticized Trump's policies as inconsistent and ineffective.
In the past, President Trump touted his transactional relationship with Chinese President Xi Jinping and progress towards a new trade agreement that would increase American agricultural exports. But Trump has taken a more hardline approach towards Beijing for downplaying the coronavirus outbreak when it first appeared in Wuhan province.
What China's unleashed on the world, it's hard to even fathom.
The Trump administration on Wednesday forced the closure of China's consulate in Houston, Texas, accusing it of illegal spying and stealing American intellectual property. The U.S. has also imposed sanctions on China for alleged human rights violations against Muslim Uyghurs and its crackdown on civil liberties in Hong Kong. Advocates for diplomacy worry about Trump's new hardball strategy.
It's more coherently hostile and confrontational in ways that I think will harm U.S. interests.
Trump's hawkish former national security advisor turned critic John Bolton has also criticized the president's get tough on China policy, telling VOA it is driven solely by electoral politics.
I think Trump's relationship with Xi Jinping goes up and down depending on the prospects for Election Day. And if Trump wins re-election, I think Xi Jinping will be his big buddy once again.
Trump is now using his hardline China policy to attack his Democratic opponent, former Vice President Joe Biden, as being soft on China.
As Vice President, Biden opposed tariffs, and he was standing up for China. He didn't want to do anything to disrupt the relationship with China.
As President Barack Obama's vice president, Biden supported conditional engagement with China on trade and security issues.
We do not fear China's rise. We want to see China rise.
But the Obama administration also tried to contain Chinese aggression by increasing the U.S. military presence in the Pacific and strengthening regional alliances. Biden has criticized Trump for talking tough but taking weak actions that fail to deter China. Biden says he would impose stronger sanctions on China, but critics say he has no clear alternative strategy.
It strikes me that he doesn't really have a coherent philosophy of international politics or an internal vision, but that he, you know, sort of responds, he follows the herd, so to speak.
The two campaigns have also accused each other of having family business ties to Chinese companies, posing possible conflicts of interest. Brian Patton, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. After months of denying it had any coronavirus infections, North Korea has reported its first suspected case, blaming an alleged defector who had recently re-entered the country. State media said a runaway had left for South Korea 3 years ago, but returned July 19th after illegally crossing into North Korea. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Indian cities have long been a magnet for migrant workers. But those cities may be losing their lure for the millions who have joined the exodus back to their villages during the COVID-19 pandemic in the biggest reverse migration witnessed in India. As cities continue to grapple with rising infections and millions are losing jobs, many are opting to start life all over again in the safer environment of their villages. Anjana Prasricha has this report about villages in northern India.
Rearing cows is not the work Rapani Bhatt is accustomed to. He was employed in a call center in Chandigarh city. Now he hopes the cattle shed he built after returning to his village will provide a livelihood. He lost his job during the COVID-19 pandemic.
I see this as a business opportunity because everything is shut due to the coronavirus. We feel far safer at home. We can use this milk and sell it also.
Thousands in North India's Chamba Valley, like Bhatt, had migrated to cities lured by higher wages. Now they are back, hoping to rebuild their lives closer home as the pandemic triggers a mass reverse migration. Many have lost jobs. Others are seeking a haven in these hillsides where the virus is still not a threat. Many are working in government-sponsored projects to build new pathways or bridges across rivers. Others are opting to raise cattle or goats. Some are reclaiming forgotten patches of land to farm.
I got money to level the land. It was difficult to cultivate because of the slope, but now I will be able to grow more crops.
They are getting financial assistance under a government initiative to create livelihood opportunities for migrants and boost rural economies.
Even though their earning may be less, but even the expenditure is low. So their net earning here is much, much better. And secondly, they are close to their homes. And thirdly, they can engage themselves in some gainful self-employment. So this self-employment is the crux of rural development.
The return of migrants could be a win-win, hopes this teacher, who has built an animal shed after losing his job in a town.
They bring back what they picked up in cities, for example, cleanliness standards. That will influence the elderly and the illiterate and help transform villages.
This village elder has some canny words of advice.
They have to prepare to slug. They can't sit there and earn money.
They are doing it, preferring the sanctuary of their homes as the coronavirus rages in cities.
There is no fear about going out and meeting people in the village. The environment is healthy. There is no danger from the virus here.
But will they stay back in the villages when the threat passes?
It's their will and it's their choice. So let's see how it turns out.
Only time will tell if glitzy cities lure them again or they build their future on these hillsides. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Coronavirus questions. Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you are sick or advised to by local authorities.
Now on VOA Asia, the Americans with Disabilities Act went into effect 30 years ago, and it has since enabled millions of people in the United States with disabilities to improve the quality of their professional and personal lives. Julie Tabo tells us more.
Years ago, discrimination against people with disabilities often started right at birth.
When I was born, a doctor came in to my mom and explained to her my diagnosis in this way. Your son is a midget like you see in the circus. So in that one sentence that he said to my mother, he's basically laid out my entire future.
Okay, just in one second, Lydia.
Boss is busy firing me because I make him uncomfortable.
But luckily, times have changed. Woodburn, who was diagnosed with dwarfism, went on to have a successful acting career, appearing in more than 30 films and making more than 150 television appearances, including the popular TV series Seinfeld.
It's little people. You got that?
His success reflects the impact of the ADA.
The ADA stands for the Americans with Disabilities Act. And the important thing that we would really want everyone to know is that it's a civil rights law. Individuals with disabilities were not part of that protection. And it became evident that they were not being included in ways that other previously marginalized groups were.
Signed into law by President George H.W. Bush in 1990, the ADA provided protection against discrimination to millions of Americans in school, on the job, and in all public and private places. By doing so, it improved access and quality of life for millions.
I think one of the most important things that we look at with the Americans with Disabilities Act is its opportunity to level the playing field.
But in the area of employment for people with disabilities, Goss acknowledges that the number remains low. In 2019, less than 20% of disabled adults had jobs, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. It's one reason why more advocacy is needed, says Woodburn.
And part of my advocacy with my own industry has been to change the landscape of employment of actors with disability, for example, because the belief system is that for kids, if you can't see it, you can't be it.
But many of the law's provisions have improved lives and even benefited those without disabilities. Ramps and curb cuts, designed to accommodate wheelchairs, for example, help others.
After those were put in place, people started to see more and more mothers walking their babies in the strollers and delivery persons using those.
And text messaging was born out of technology for the hearing impaired.
We owe that to the deaf community and their need to have that access.
As the ADA celebrates 30 years of advancing the lives of millions of Americans, Woodburn says there's still plenty of room for improvement.
We have to be included every step of the way, and we're just not right now. So my hope is that anyone that has a diversity or inclusion discussion, either as an advocate or as a corporate leader, that they always include disability, despite how uncomfortable it might make them feel.
Julie Tabo, VOA News, Washington.
Two countries launched missions in a space race to Mars, as the United States is set to launch this week the most complex mission ever to the Red Planet. A satellite snaps pictures of the sun in ways Earth-based cameras cannot, and the comet NASA calls a natural firework has once again streaked over our skies. VOA's Arash Arabasadi brings us the week in space.
American astronauts Bob Behnken and Chris Cassidy taking a spacewalk this week to switch batteries outside the International Space Station.
Copy, Chris.
It was the duo's fourth spacewalk in a month. Each have completed a total of 10 spacewalks, tying the U.S. record. In less than 2 weeks, Behnken and Cassidy will leave the ISS aboard the same SpaceX Dragon crew capsule that brought them in May. It will be the first splashdown off the Florida coast in 45 years.
Liftoff.
SpaceX joined the history-making week with a record-setting turnaround speed to relaunch the same Falcon 9 booster that sent astronauts Behnken and Cassidy to the ISS. The booster carried a South Korean communications satellite and successfully landed aboard a drone ship called Just Read the Instructions. Meanwhile, the European Space Agency and NASA have released the first images of what they call campfires on the sun. The images came from their joint mission called Solar Orbiter.
We're going to be able to, for the first time, image the polar regions of the sun. So it's going to go close to the sun, but it's also going to go above the poles. And so we're going to be able to see the magnetic fields and the flows on the polar regions, which we've never done before.
Project scientist Holly Gilbert says Solar Orbiter's proximity to the sun more accurately measures the star's weather than do cameras on Earth.
By imaging and being able to observe the polar regions, we're going to be able to understand more about what's happening inside the sun as well. It's going to be really exciting when we first observe the poles because we don't know what we'll see, and we really don't have a real great handle on that. And also as we get closer and the imaging getting closer, I think that's going to be really exciting.
Gilbert adds the closer images may help researchers better understand how the atmosphere outside the sun is hotter than its surface, while also providing a clearer understanding of weather conditions on or near the sun. This could help safeguard air travel and wireless networks on Earth. In other news, the United Arab Emirates recently launched a rocket from Japan to Mars, marking the Arab world's first interplanetary mission. Expect the craft to reach Mars in February of 2021, marking 50 years since the formation of the UAE. China also started its summer road trip to Mars with its launch of an unmanned probe. It is the country's first independent mission to another planet. The probe should begin looking for a soft entry point through the planet's atmosphere in February on its mission to search for signs of water or ice. Finally this week, the comet C2020F3, better known as NEOWISE, streaked through the Swiss skies. After disappearing from view July 23rd, NASA says it will not be seen again for 6,800 years. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, all at VOA Asia. We thank you so much for joining us today. Come back again. We also thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.